Thank you for listening to The Spectator podcast. We've got a new offer. You can get a free Brexit butterfly mug, as well as 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12, if you subscribe at spectator.co.uk/mug.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily, and sometimes more than daily, politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, and I think it's safe to say the cabinet reshuffle's almost completed. We're still getting a few of the junior ministerial announcements coming through. Our first podcast of the day was focused on the surprising news for many that Sajid Javid had quit as Chancellor and Rishi Sunak was his successor. Now, away from that, and we will touch on it near the end of the podcast, the developments there, what have been the big news lines of the day, James, in terms of new appointments?
So I think this is the loyalty, discipline and competence reshuffle. I think appointments to look at, to note, Suella Braverman becomes Attorney General. That is significant because she is the person outside number 10 who is most keen on dealing with the issue of judicial review and, you know, rebalancing the relationship between Parliament and the courts. I mean, this is a clear sign that number 10 is going to go full steam ahead on reforms to the judiciary, and I don't mean the judges are going to take that lying down. I think if you look at Olive Down going to culture, media and sport, you see what number 10 value. He is an extremely competent minister. He knows his way around Whitehall, having been David Cameron's chief of staff and how to get things done. And he also backed Boris Johnson in 2016 and 2019 for the leadership, despite having worked for Cameron. And he doesn't try and create a kind of media profile or buzz about himself. So he is rewarded with what is one of the most, I think, enjoyable jobs in
Ministry of Fun.
Government. Yeah. I think he will be very happy with the number 10 line on the BBC. So I think you see that. I think you see George Eustace going to the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. Now, the Tory party has a kind of mild split between the kind of animal welfare lobby and the kind of traditional farming Tory vote. I think Eustace kind of neatly straddles that division. You know, he's a former farmer himself, but he's also quite hot on animal welfare. He's very worried about the excessive use of certain slaughter methods and thinks they should be restricted kind of to certain religious groups rather than a kind of general use of halal slaughter, for example. So I think you see a kind of pattern there. I think you also see an attempt to show people that there is hope, that there is a way back. Number 10 today were very keen to say that there was a way back for Sajid Javid. And we see both Penny Morden and James Brokenshire returning to government, now not, admittedly, not in cabinet roles, but in kind of senior minister of state roles. I think you also see number 10 trying to create that kind of pipeline, a horrible phrase, of female talent. Note how Helen Waitley has gone to become a Minister of State at the Department of Health. I mean, she in social care. I think she is going to be one of the next cabs off the rank.
When we're looking at these new appointments, I was wondering, James, are we getting much of a sense now, because we are getting sense in terms of loyalty, in terms of what they value. Are we getting much of a sense in terms of this government's Brexit plan? I mean, the government has said they're going for divergence, but some of these appointments, so if you look at DEFRA, you know, farming is clearly going to be a controversial area. Liz Truss has remained in international trade. She's someone who is probably as far away from protectionist as you can get. So have any of the appointments today kind of confirmed, I suppose, where Boris Johnson is going, as opposed to either who had them previously or...
I think it was before, but this is now an unambiguously leave government, and it's an unambiguously pro-divergence government. You look at the great offices of state, you know, you've got Boris Johnson, Dominic Raab, Rishi Sunak, Priti Patel, all of whom believe in divergence. You know, on top of that, you have Michael Gove, another Vote Leave alumni, at the Cabinet Office. And I think one of the other things about this is that this has created an incredibly powerful centre, because what you've essentially seen is the Prime Minister is the senior minister in the Cabinet Office. He is the first Lord of the Treasury, and I think it's fair to say asserting that title. And when you've got those, the number 10, the Cabinet Office and the Treasury on the same page, it is impossible for any other department, any agency to resist what that group want. They are so powerful. I think you see here, what you see is that in this government, change is going to be driven from the centre. And I think you're going to see that trio just relentlessly hauling departments over the coals on delivering on those Tory manifesto commitments. I think that is, I think number 10, you know, in Westminster, there's a like, oh, where's their more policy? Where are the big philosophical speeches? All this stuff. This number 10 isn't interested in that. What they are interested in is saying, like, look, we've got to kind of deliver a kind of down payment to our voters. And that means doing the stuff that they said in the manifesto about, you know, more police, more nurses, all of that.
Now, returning to the issue of Sajid Javid, which is the big story from this reshuffle, to the point that at one point this morning, it seemed that Julian Smith getting the sack was the thing that was triggering the most interest, but it's just fallen way back in comparison. Sajid Javid has spoken today. He's spoken to the BBC, and he's also now published his resignation letter. James, what have we gleaned from both of these appearances? I'd have to say the resignation letter seems to be slightly more conciliatory spirits than perhaps the clip.
So, I mean, but I think the resignation letter also has lots of barbed lines about how you'd want your team to reflect your own integrity and character, which I think, given what we know of the conversation between Sajid Javid and Boris Johnson, when Sajid Javid essentially said, well, it's either my way of doing it or Dominic Cummings' way of doing it, is clearly meant as a dig. I think in the clip, he tried to basically say, well, no self-respecting minister could have accepted this offer. But I mean, there is a tricky question for Sajid Javid, which again, this is a kind of sign of how changed the political landscape is. You know, there is a Tory majority of 80 here. And in both the clip and the letter, he's keen to stress that, you know, he's going to be loyal, he's not planning to. But it's not clear what his political options are, because there is a solid majority for Boris Johnson in the Commons. And I think that, you know, Boris Johnson and on questions on issues such as Brexit and the like, you know, Boris Johnson and the Tory grassroots are probably more aligned than Sajid Javid and the Tory grassroots. So I think it's a, I think Sajid Javid is a kind of tricky situation for him to handle. And I think there is a big kind of choice for him to make, which is, you know, does he choose to be, you know, keep his powder relatively dry, be fairly dignified, or does he choose to set himself up as the big rival voice in the Tory party right now to Boris Johnson?
The signs so far suggest that he is leaning towards the loyal route, in the sense that he has, I think we'll have to see what more he chooses to do, but it sounds as though he has made his point on staffing, but he's suggesting he is not going to try and frustrate this government. And also, I think it's fair to say that his relationship with his successor, Rishi Sunak, is a fairly positive relationship.
I think if you, in medieval terms, I think what he is going to do is be loyal to the king and blame everything on the king's advisers. And I mean, that is the position he will try and take, which is, you know, he is pro Boris Johnson, but not pro the court of Boris Johnson.
Which doesn't make it that easy to see the route back while the court
remains as it is, yes.
It's been interesting, James, over the past week, because lots of people and lots of articles have been written about the diminishing power of Dominic Cummings and this idea that Boris Johnson's senior aide was losing his grip. Now, there are various ways that this was put forward. In one article, it was a senior Treasury source, which might tell us enough about what happened today. But elsewhere, people pointing at various policy decisions, the fact that Dominic Cummings at one point was anti-HS2 and that had gone ahead. Looking at this reshuffle and how everything has played out, you don't really get the impression, do you, that Dominic Cummings' stock is low?
I think Westminster only has two modes when it comes to Dominic Cummings. He's either in total and utter control of the government and nothing can happen without him, or he's losing his grip and his influence and when is he going to walk away? The truth is that neither of those statements are accurate. Boris Johnson was always going to be his prime minister. But I think if you talk to people who went to the party at number 10 on Brexit night, it is quite clear that Boris Johnson is going to be his own prime minister, but it's quite clear that Boris Johnson knows what he owes Dominic Cummings. As he said in the speech at that event, you know, Dominic Cummings, you know, delivered both the referendum victory with Take Back Control and the 2019 victory with Get Brexit Done. And so, you know, Boris Johnson knows that no other individual has been more key to his rise than Dominic. You know, the fact that he is now a prime minister in a remarkably powerful position than Dominic Cummings. But I think what you are going to see here is a very powerful centre that will drive change. This is not going to be a government that says to cabinet ministers, here's your department, why don't you go off and come up with a few ideas and come back to us and tell us what you want to do. This is a department that is like, you know, Suella Braverman, you are aligned with us on this question of judicial review, so we want you to be Attorney General and deliver that. That's the kind of way this government is going to work.
So we have an all-powerful centre. We've had a reshuffle, which I think has seen Number 10 take control, or even more control, if you look at the end product. I don't think it was Boris Johnson's intention to lose Sajid Javid, but it was the intention of the reshuffle to centralise power, and on that final aim, it has succeeded, even if there were a few hurdles along the way. James, what do you think are the potential pitfalls and difficulties of having such centralised operation in terms of having so much power in Number 10?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, at times there is meant to be a kind of constructive tension between Number 10 and the Treasury. And I think, you know, they've got to be careful not to entirely lose that kind of grit in the oyster, that kind of willingness to say, oh, well, you know, you've got to avoid succumbing to groupthink. But I think that, you know, the view is, you know, this is how they are going to deliver on what they want to deliver on. And we haven't seen a centre this powerful before in British politics. And I think the jury must be out on whether it can work or not. You know, it's like a kind of transplant. Is the kind of body politic going to reject it? Or is this actually going to end up in a situation where things happen because you've got Number 10, the Treasury and the Cabinet Office, the three most powerful bits of government, on the same page on every issue?
Do you think there's potential for more ministers to resign in the future? I know there's always potential for ministers to go, but what I mean here is on the specific issue of, I suppose, having power taken away and Number 10 ultimately deciding lots of things in departments, do you think there's a chance that more ministers in the future will become too much? Do you think a lot of the people who've decided to stay in cabinet, who are relieved to keep their jobs, have actually accepted or come to terms with the fact that this is a Number 10 heavy government?
I think you know the terms of trade now. I think, frankly, if you haven't clocked how this is working, you're fairly naive. I also think that, you know, if you are going to resign, what's the way back? People tend to resign when either it's a massive issue of principle that they cannot countenance, or they think that, you know, this is not going to be forever. I think right now, looking at the size of the Tory majority and looking at Boris Johnson's popularity in the Tory party, it would be a bold minister who would think that they would resign and then that they would then have wilderness months rather than wilderness years.
Thank you, James. Now, before MPs and ministers head to a week of holidays, or recess if you want to put it like that, Boris Johnson will convene a meeting of his cabinet tomorrow for the first time, his new look cabinet, and we will bring you all the news from how that goes tomorrow on this podcast, so do join us then. And also, we have a live Coffee House Shots recording, which will be on the budget. We had advertised this as Sajid Javid's budget. I think if you look at the current issue of the Spectator magazine, there is an advert where we say we'll be analysing Sajid Javid's budget that evening. That is no longer the case. But if you would like a ticket to watch James Fraser and myself analyse Rishi Sunak's first budget, then do please buy a ticket and perhaps even buy one for your friend. Just go to www.spectator.co.uk/budget.